kdo to ví, vážení televizní diváci, ale dnešní host rozhovoru Britských listů, Robert Tate, je takovým komunikačním kanálem o České republice pro vnější svět. Žije v Praze a píše velmi pravidelně o České republice pro deník Guardian a Observer. Tohle to je jeho informace o něm na stránkách deníku Guardian. Ten britský nebo možná globální deník má obrovský dosah. Když psal loni v lednu o exekutorské krizi, tak to vyvolalo po celém světě velký ohlas. Stejně tak jeho četné další články o České republice, o současné politice. Ale v dnešním rozhovoru Britských listů bych se chtěl pana Tatea zeptat na jeho předchozí novinářskou praxi, protože on je zkušeným novinářem z celého světa. Mr. Tate, you are a Scotsman. You are from. You studied at Glasgow University, I thought.
Strathclyde University.
Strathclyde University, okay. And obviously, you started writing for the Scotsman Daily, which is a publication, daily newspaper, which comes out in Edinburgh. How did your journalistic career start? And what did you do in the Scotsman, basically?
In fact, I didn't start in the Scotsman. I started lower down the scale. I started a local paper in England, in Peterborough, in Cambridgeshire.
All right.
And that's how you started in journalism in that era, which was, we're not talking 30 years ago.
All right.
Slightly more. And so I started a daily local newspaper, an evening newspaper in Peterborough. I then moved on. I went back to my native Scotland after a couple of years and worked for what was then a very big newspaper, originally the Glasgow Evening Times. Mm-hmm. And then after a few years, I moved on to the Scotsman. But you know, I started in journalism in a very different era, at a time when you would, traditionally you would, one would start at the bottom, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I don't think young people with ambition who want to become foreign correspondents, as I have, would do that anymore, simply because the newspaper industry is one in which the bottom has quite literally been knocked out. I mean, that bottom no longer exists. Mm-hmm. So the paper I started on, the Peterborough Evening Telegraph, no longer exists as an evening paper. It's now a weekly, apparently. Mm-hmm. And even the Glasgow Evening Times, once a very big metropolitan newspaper, has changed its name. It's no longer an evening paper, and its circulation is vastly reduced from the days when I worked there. And it's like all organs in the print industry, and it's predominantly viewed on the web.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, there is a cataclysmic development with printed newspapers. It's true. Nevertheless, you were lucky to actually go from the top and ending up in the Scotsman. That you were a Washington correspondent during Clinton impeachment time. No.
Well, that's when it started. My career as a foreign correspondent really began fortuitously as a result of Bill Clinton's travails, shall we call them, with Monica Lewinsky. I was sent there initially. At the time of the publication of the Star Report, this was a special prosecutor, although he wasn't called that, he was an independent counsel. That's a position that no longer exists in the US system. And he was investigating various allegations against Bill Clinton stretching back years to his time as governor of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And this all culminated in the scandal involving Monica Lewinsky. Oh. And when that happened, I hadn't really been in the Scotsman that long. And they, for one reason or another, I was chosen to go out there and add some color to the reporting that was being filed by the resident Washington correspondent at that time. And one way or another, it all worked out quite well. I think I must have written something quite funny or amusing or colourful. And then two or three months later, this whole process led to impeachment. And I saw this coming and I said, well, I think I'd like to go back. I said to my wife, I think I should go back to Washington and report on the impeachment proceedings in the House. This was December 1998. And quite to my amazement, they agreed. They said, go, please go. They sent me again. I was there for another 10 days. I was literally in the House of Representatives when Clinton was impeached. And and many of the same figures who are now going to refigure or re-emerge, resurface in the ongoing process against Donald Trump were there then, such as Lindsey Graham. He was an impeachment manager in the House of Representatives, and he, of course, is a close ally of Trump. So I saw all this unfold, and it was really as a result of these two episodes, me being sent to Washington as a sort of add-on, as a color writer, that then led to my appointment as a full-time Washington correspondent for The Scotsman.
How can you briefly, in a nutshell, kind of describe your sort of for experience of actually leaving Edinburgh and going onto the sort of world stage in Washington, whatever? Was there anything significant that, or any difference that you actually experienced?
It's hard to encapsulate in a few words. It was just a different world. Scotland is a little bit of a pressure cooker. Certainly at that time, there were many newspapers competing for and covering what has to be said in cool consideration, not an awful lot of news. What happens in Scotland, I'm not talking about now, and I'm talking about in general, is not always earth-shattering. It's not. It's too small a place, as we speak today, in Scotland is still not an independent sovereign state. So it's not the biggest news story in the world. So there'd be a lot of overheated stories in Scotland. That's what I felt in hindsight. And moving on to Washington suddenly, it seemed a very, very big step at the time.
Then you ended up in The Guardian, and you were a reporter in Iran, of all places, in Tehran.
Of all places, yes.
Yes. What was it like?
How to answer that question? I didn't go straight from Washington to Tehran. It was more complicated than that. Some would say a bit more suicidal. I was first in between times. I was in Jerusalem. I worked for the Times.
So you were first in Jerusalem.
I was first in
Jerusalem,
went to Tehran. And this would be a move which today would not be possible.
Exactly. How did they even allow you after being in Israel to go to Iran?
It's a bit of a mystery. But I was very open with them. I told them where I was. They were initially suspicious. It took me 5 months, actually slightly more than that, for my visa to come through. So I was sort of in limbo for quite a long time between leaving Jerusalem and going to Tehran. It's probably explained by the fact that at that point there was a lower level of mistrust, shall we say. They were still suspicious, but not to the level that that reached subsequently. And at that point, the president of Iran was still a reformist called Mohammad Khatami.
I think you characterized him as Iranian Dubček.
Yes, I don't think that is a stretch too far. That would be a fair shorthand summary of where he stood in the Iranian spectrum.
What was it? How long were you in Tehran?
Exactly 2 years and 11 months.
What was it like living in that society?
Strange, but in ways that you wouldn't necessarily expect. I went away with the expectation that there would be an enormous culture shock for me, and that it would be very, very different. And of course it is. But the culture shock was less than I expected, and I found that Iran was a much more modernistic and even, I hesitate to use a term, westward-leaning society than I had expected. And one thing I learned from the Iran experience is in all these authoritarian, dictatorial societies, there was much more freedom on the ground than you would necessarily expect. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, there may be a regime which is very... authoritarian, forceful, and imposing, and all the rest of it. But people have to live their lives, that's what I found.
You were also in Turkey.
Yes.
In Istanbul.
Yes.
When and how long?
Between 2008 and 2010. That was for 2 years, and that happened because I was thrown out of Iran. Mm-hmm. I did not leave Iran voluntarily. The regime got fed up. With my reporting, they have now got fed up with everybody's reporting.
Yes.
And so I was, my visa was revoked and my residence permit was cancelled, and I had to leave within a very short space of time, 2.5 weeks.
Turkey was probably much more liberal than it is now then. Was it?
Well, I think using the term liberal with a country like Turkey is always relative. Mm-hmm. It has to be qualified. Yes, probably things were easier in Turkey at that time. There was a greater level of free speech. There was a much more pluralistic media in terms of ownership. The authoritarian tendencies of President, who was then the Prime Minister, Erdogan, were apparent but less obvious to the outsider. Mm-hmm. And so you could see where the thing might go.
Did he imprison journalists when you were there?
Yes, he did. Uh-huh, okay. Yes, there were journalists imprisoned in Turkey.
So what was the difference between Iran and Turkey then? This is a subversive question.
That's an interesting question. The difference between Iran and Turkey was that Iran was very easy to cover, even though it was quite explicitly an authoritarian state that was hostile to journalists, mm-hmm. because it was, in black and white terms, open quotes, not on our side. So it was a very black and white, simple story, mm-hmm. in that respect. Turkey was more complicated because Turkey was and remains a member of the NATO alliance. So it is, in simple language, on our side. So it wasn't easy to cast Turkey or even then Prime Minister Erdogan as the bad guy. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a very difficult, nuanced story to get across.
This is quite interesting that only because somebody is a NATO member, these days it wouldn't be taken. I mean, these days everybody knows that Erdogan is a maniac, yet he's a member of NATO. But then you were discouraged to write critically about him.
No, I was not discouraged to write critically about him. It was just that there was less demand for it.
All right.
That's how the newspaper
industry
is.
But this is, I suppose,
what
I mean. The editor tells you what to write about, frankly.
No,
yes.
Nobody did. No one ever did that at the Guardian. And really, the example of that happening in my career are few and far between. Just that.
Nevertheless, they commission articles,
yes,
on a certain topic.
Indeed.
And you're saying that they didn't commission articles, go and show what a maniac Erdogan is? Because
not really, no. Uh-huh. But they didn't stop me from doing so. And there were times when I would do so. And mm-hmm. I did write articles in Turkey about the increasing, what you might call, Islamization of society, the decreasing and declining level of tolerance for liberal values, and also a couple of interviews with him face to face, and mm-hmm. this did happen. I interviewed him twice when he expressed quite open sympathy with the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Really?
Yes, on the second occasion, I mean, this happened literally months, weeks after Ahmadinejad had been re-elected in circumstances that you can only politely describe as hotly disputed. Mm-hmm. It had been a very violently contested election, and Ahmadinejad's opponents universally believed that the election had been stolen. And here we had a prime minister, a head of a government of a Western allied member, saying that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was his friend. There was no doubt that he is our friend. This is what he told me.
And finally, got about a minute, all this experience, Iran, Israel, Turkey, Washington, how does it briefly compare with your work in the Czech Republic now?
Well, the Czech Republic is not a news hub. Mm-hmm. Not these days. It has been on occasion in the past. It's hard to compare. The Czech Republic is a functioning, stable society in which, and I would say this in contrast to what a lot of people in the Czech Republic probably believe, things are getting better here. Uh-huh. Over a long period of time, the conditions here politically and economically are getting better. But that's starting from a very low base. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's different.
Different in the sense that also you have to work very hard to get your pieces published on an international scene,
yes, that's right. And there's not a huge amount of demand for what's happening in the Czech Republic at the moment, because it seems to be stable. On the other hand, there are many hidden stories here. There are many hidden tales which people don't know about, and that creates a level of interest and curiosity on its own.
Thank you very much. Mm. Děkujeme vám. Naschledanou.